Welcome back. Joining me for a look at the day's market activity is independent analyst Jimmy Muyaha. Thank you for your time, Jimmy. Let's start off with those inflation figures that we saw coming out of China earlier on. Of course, this as the country battles with an outbreak of COVID and lockdown. So we had producer prices surging 8.3%, with consumer prices climbing 1.5% year on year. What's interesting for me is that gap between PPI and CPI. What exactly is that saying?
Good evening. Well, I mean, for China, we've always known that China's been a production-heavy country, and they've always prioritized getting the output and the best out of the output from a production perspective, more so than monitoring and making sure that on their side, the consumption side of things are kept in check. I mean, the Chinese Communist Party and the Chinese government have not fallen short in the past of things around ensuring that the Chinese yuan is devalued when it's suitable for them and that sort of thing. So I mean, for China at the moment, the numbers are more a gauge of where the country's sitting. If you remember, at the end of last year, they reported that they had a slowdown in their overall growth or the GDP growth for the country, and for them, a slowdown at that point was about 8.1%. So China's always, at this point, particularly with everything that's happening around the world, is looking to focus on ensuring that their production numbers are better than the CPI numbers, for example, in this case. And they're looking to probably look to focus on monitoring that and keeping that in control, like they did last year when they released some of their strategic reserves of oil during the oil crisis to their local refineries to ensure that local production is not affected or the impact of that is limited from the global oil crisis. So from that perspective, I mean, I think we can look at the numbers and you can obviously see that while CPI and PPI are both on the up, for China, the main concern at this point is to ensure that they get their overall growth and production levels back to where they were before they claimed the decline that they saw last year.
Mm. All right, let's go on to some of the big news in the tech space. I think for the past week, it's been the marriage between Elon Musk and Twitter. So we've had Twitter shares tumbling about 8% today on the announcement that Twitter made that Elon will not be joining the board anymore. Of course, this is after we saw that 27% surge in Twitter shares on Monday when it was announced that he's acquired a 9.2% stake in the social media platform. I mean, looking at just those dynamics, with him being on the board, right, they said that his stake would be limited to 14.9%. So I'm guessing now because he's not going to be on the board anymore, he could increase the stake to more than 14.9%. What do you make of this latest move?
Well, that's one element of all of this. I mean, initially, yes, of course, there was that conversation that Elon would come on board at a board level, and he had initially given indications that he might accept that. But if you look at the statement issued by the Twitter CEO, was that part of being on the board outlined that Elon's fiduciary duty would be to act in the best interests of Twitter at all times. And that could then have, in turn, possibly in future, limited Elon's freedom of speech in certain aspects or towards certain subjects that he may feel strongly about and may want to be vocal about. We've seen that he has been vocal towards his 80 million followers on Twitter in the past about his view on certain issues. And he might not want to be limited by the red tape that comes with a board seat, for example. But yes, another big element of it is the fact that he can now acquire more than 14% of the company, which, if you remember in the past, Elon had initially mentioned that he wanted to build something much like Twitter many, many years ago. So this could be something strategic for him to not limit himself in terms of, one, what he's able to say on the platform, two, how much of the platform he's able to acquire. We know he's already the largest single shareholder of Twitter at the moment, so it could just be a long-term strategic goal to get more of the share from that perspective. It's still not going to stop his involvement I mean, we know he's got a close relationship with the CEO already.
Yeah.
So it's not likely to stop his involvement within the company, not sitting on the board, but it is likely to give him a bit more freedoms.
Mm. All right, let's talk about company results. Purple Group, the Easy Equities owner, came out with results today, doubling profit, talking about growth in customers. That share price under pressure, though, I saw a decline of over 5%. Talk to me about the fundamentals of the business. We've got the CEO saying that the fundamentals are very, very good, but looking at those share price movements, seeming that some investors are not too convinced.
Yeah, so Purple Group's got a couple of different areas to its business. I mean, Charles Savage has built this business over a number of decades, and essentially, I mean, they've got the GT247 group or stable there that's dealing with their CFD products. They've got the Easy Equity side of their business, which has taken the longest time to reach profitability, but now is probably one of their most profitable business units. And if you just look at some of their units, like I said, the Easy Equities business, for one, is doing exceptionally well at this point. But if you look at the performance that we've seen out of their brokerage business, their CFD brokerage business, that when compared to its competitors, both locally and internationally, you'll see that the growth on that hasn't been where it should be, given the volatility we saw in 2020 and 2021, and how trading and online brokerage businesses did in that time. Other businesses fared exceptionally well, but guys like GT247 and international competitors such as Admirals as well also reported a huge decline in revenues for the last quarter of 2021 as they saw the slowdown or the reduction in volatility. So I think from Purple Group's perspective, they are definitely good core business assets under the portfolio of the company, and I think it's just about possibly repositioning one or two of the businesses to get a more attractive outlook from shareholders. For the longest time, it's been a fairly safe situation for the Purple Group. They've been able to maintain a strong balance sheet, maintain good liquidity and good equity levels. And for now, I think it's just about repositioning one or two of their units slightly, optimizing that to take advantage of things like the new regulation that they're likely to get, as well as the increase in the demand for online trading and the demand for things like cryptocurrencies and that sort of thing going forward.
All right. Quickly, Jimmy, your stock pick for today. We have about 20 seconds.
Sentinel One in the US. Cybersecurity firm. Haven't given out a cybersecurity firm yet as a stock pick, and the reason for that is pretty obvious. We're going into Web3, we're going into the metaverse. We've got a physical war that's going on around the world between the United States and Russia that could very quickly turn into a cyber war. You've got things like the TransUnion hacking that happened recently. So we're going further and further into this technological age, and cybersecurity is always a good thing. The share is trading at a really good price at the moment. It's trading below its initial IPO price of $35. And we're looking at upside, potentially initial target $50, then $80, and then new highs from that perspective.
All right, quite an interesting one, and the reasons that you are choosing it. Thank you very much for your time, Jimmy. That was independent analyst Jimmy Muyaha.